I'm trained as a grassland ecologist, and within the field of plant ecology, community ecologists have spent a long time trying to answer and understand the controls to some basic ecological questions, some of which have to do with what controls productivity-diversity relationships. So over the last 15 years, there's been a significant number of papers published on this topic. And it really ranges all over the place. You know, there are reasons to think low productivity places may be really diverse. There's studies that show medium productivity places are the most diverse, and then there's studies that show the most diverse places are actually the highest productivity sites. So we're having a hard time kind of understanding what controls that. We think that part of the problem is that some sites are very likely to be top-down controlled. So these sites would probably have high herbivore loads. They would be experiencing a significant amount of potentially selective grazing that could then have a very dramatic and forceful effect on the diversity of the plant community that they're feeding on. Other grasslands, however, may have very little top-down control and be much more bottom-up controlled. So nutrient availability will be dictating what species occur in different types of mixes. A second question that plant community ecologists have spent a lot of time on is what contributes to invasibility of grassland systems. And maybe a little bit more generally, one take-home message that seems to be emerging from those studies is that the more nutrients you give a place, the more weedy or dominated by invasives it's likely to become. The work that I'm going to show you today is part of an attempt to do a global study to try to evaluate top-down versus bottom-up controls on grassland community dynamics. It's called the Nutrient Addition Network, or NutNet. Some people call it NutNet. It has, I think, currently 55 sites on all continents except Antarctica down there at the south. You can see a wide range in elevation and precipitation. Grass communities are all over the place. Some of them are annuals. A lot of them are perennials. Some of them are agronomic grasses. A lot of them are native grasses. Some of them are Mediterranean climate. Some of them are continental climate. So it's really all over. I'm going to present the work that we're contributing from one of these sites in Kentucky. And the specific questions are basically what controls plant production and species composition in a cool season mixed species forage system? To what extent are plant production and diversity co-limited by multiple nutrients? And then finally, does more nutrients and or production equal less diversity or more invasion? Thanks, Andy, in these areas. So because the Nutrient Addition Network, NutNet, encompasses this broad range of sites, grasslands that would peak at all different times of year and completely different climate and fertility conditions, they set up an experiment where we basically do a pretty simple one-time application every year. So one-time application of nutrients. It's a randomized complete block design where we have the bottom-up control are the nutrients, so you can see plus N. So here we go. Let's see. We have the exclosures over here because we need to get at the top-down control. So we've put up exclosures at these areas to remove or try to eliminate at least certain groups of herbivores from some of these systems. So a control, no fertilizer, no exclosure, plus nitrogen, plus phosphorus, plus K. And the thing to remember here is the first year of study, plus K came with a micronutrient as well, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Plus P and K, plus N and K, N and P, N, P and K. And then two with exclosures, a control, so no nutrient that's being, herbivores are being removed, and then an N, P and K with an exclosure. The Nutrient Addition started in spring of 2008. We have nitrogen being added as ammonium nitrate at this rate, triple superphosphate for P, potassium sulfate for K, and then, like I said, all of these K additions for the first year came with a micromax addition, which was quite high. In 2009 and continuing beyond, we had some changes. The form of nitrogen changed to time-released urea, and this is because Australia, China, and some portions of Europe were having a very hard time getting their hands on ammonia nitrate in the last year. It's just not been easy for them to acquire, and so we decided the whole network needed to change to something that these people could get, and so we went with time-released urea. The rate of potassium was cut in half, and Micromax is not planning to be added again unless some site feels like they need it. This is an example, so it's three replicates, complete block design, and the plots are 2 by 2 meters. We took pretreatment data in 2007, and then treatment started spring for us in 2008 and have continued in 2009. We sample all 30 experimental blocks on a yearly basis, and we do it at peak standing biomass, so just one time a year. And for us, this means late May, but you can imagine in California, it means a different time of year, in China, in Australia, even different. So everybody's just going with peak standing biomass, whenever that is for your site. We took visual estimates of species composition, we clipped plant biomass and production, and then we took light availability measurements above and below ground, above and below the canopy. In Kentucky, we're contributing, my lab's contributing two sites, one in western Kentucky, Hulse Prairie, that's a restored tallgrass prairie, but the one I'm going to talk to you about today is in Fayette County at the University of Kentucky Spindletop Research Farm. It's a managed cool season pasture, which for us means tall fescue, orchard grass, and Kentucky bluegrass. It's been basically treated as a hay farm for quite a while. It was overseeded with select tall fescue about 7 to 8 years ago. It's hayed 3 times a year, and it's been historically receiving 10 to 20 pounds of nitrogen applied once in the spring. This is what it looks like before we started the experiment. This is my master's student, Glade Brosey, hand applying the fertilizer applications. This is what species composition at the site looked like prior to treatment, so quite a bit, some orchard grass and bluegrass in here, a little bit of fescue. We clip these things to ground level at peak standing biomass, and then we have student workers that sort them into three functional groups, so legumes, forbs, and graminoids. This is the beginning of the experiment, March 17th, 2008. We came out, so the fertilizer went on March 17th. 2 weeks later, you can start to see we're having fertilizer responses. Okay, and these are what our exclosures look like here. Same date, but an example with the exclosure. So here we have an NP and K addition and an exclosure on the left and a control exclosure on the right. So visual responses happening very quickly. By May 1st, you can see that this has changed even more. Here we have a site plot that's being dominated by Kentucky bluegrass in response to some fertilizer treatment, whereas over here we have a plot that is dominated, looks quite a bit, by vetch. And we harvest the site in late May, as we consider our peak standing biomass. And so this is June, it's been hayed, so the mowers have come through and cut everything back. We hay the inside of the exclosures too to keep them similar management. And what I'm showing here is that the big flowered vetch actually responded so much in these plots that it basically killed a significant amount of the grass vegetation in these areas. So after the harvest, you can see quite a bit of dead material on the ground and a considerable amount less of plant cover in general. Which, of course, means that by August 1st of the same year, we have had new species emerge in these areas, which you can probably all guess what these might be. Very much crabgrass and some nimblewill for us. So C4, I guess you could call them forages, but also weeds, usually. And this does not get represented in our data because, again, we're only sampling these once. So at peak standing, so May 1st, so we missed this little blip and occurrence here. So if you look at what controls plant production, here we have above ground biomass on the Y, the different nutrient treatments on the X, the 2 years, 2008, the first year of application in 2009. The blue is our grass, the yellowish the forb, and the light blue the legume. What controls plant production in this system? Nitrogen. The more nitrogen you give it, and when you give it nitrogen, you usually get a pretty good-sized graminoid response. So those cool season grasses produce more. And you can see this is true here, here with P, here with K, and to a lesser degree and when you have all three added together. Very little evidence of phosphorus or potassium limitation on production at all. What controls the species composition of these areas? So here we have, if we start with the control, the bright red triangles kind of here in the middle. So this is an ordination of the visual cover of species composition. First thing to point out is it's accounting for a lot of the variability. Almost 90% of the variability in the data is coming through in this NMDS. Controls here in the center, all the nitrogen treatments are falling out basically right up here. So nitrogen alone, nitrogen plus phosphorus, and then let's see, the thing to point out, and then we have phosphorus here as well. All these guys down here are where we're adding potassium. Okay, so when you add plus K, you get the pink, N plus K, the yellows, P plus K, the dark reds over here, and then N, P, and K. So basically, any kind of K addition is pushing the species composition down to the bottom half of this ordination. And that is primarily, like you could tell from the pictures, being driven by big-flowered vetch on both axes. Controls and the nitrogen treatments, high with Kentucky bluegrass and orchard grass responding to those. Gibbet K and big-flowered vetch turns on. This also comes through if you look at the individual. So for those of you that don't know big-flowered vetch, it's over here, courtesy of Texas A&M's Forages website. When you add nitrogen, Kentucky bluegrass goes up. So here, N and NMP, for example. Kentucky bluegrass, very low in production at all of these areas, which correspond with the K additions. And you can see big-flowered vetch is just overwhelming it. I should also mention that we tested, remember, K comes with the micronutrient, at least that first year it did. So the second year in 2009, we did a separate experiment where we added K alone and the Micromax alone to see which one was causing the big-flowered vetch response, and it was completely K. So it's potassium in this case. What are the controls of species richness? Here we can have total number of species and the different treatments. You can see that in general, the more diverse nutrient additions in P and K, and you're tending to reduce total species richness at this site. What's the effect of species diversity? So here we have a diversity indice in the nutrient treatments. While significant effects here, it's not really all that straightforward. It looks like potentially the N and P addition and maybe the K additions are a bit on the lower, but it's a fairly hard take-home message here, other than perhaps the control has the most diverse site. So what controls plant production in these systems? Nitrogen, by impacting the grass. What controls species composition? K and big-flowered vetch. To what extent are these things co-limited? Probably not that much. Our data doesn't suggest that there's a ton of co-limitation on the nitrogen, on the production side, or the species side. Do more nutrients and or production equal less diversity? We didn't see that so much, but it does look like it indicates that there's less species richness, at least for the first 2 years of the study. With that, I'd like to thank my support scientist, Jim Nelson, my two graduate students that have been involved in the project, Glade Brosy and Jacob Segrist, and sources of funding. And I'll take questions. Thanks.
We have time for a couple of questions. One of you can hit the lines. Thank you.
Yeah, in the back there.
Yeah, Rebecca, did you do initial soil test PK estimates at your site and then globally so that you've got some baseline understanding of where you started?
We have all those in archive. So we don't have results for you yet, but we did take soil samples before we added any nutrients from all the sites, and so we will know the diversity. As you can imagine, across the global range of sites, quite a bit of diversity in the initial fertility levels.
The sites weren't selected specifically because they were low in fertility?
No. No, in fact, the guidelines for selecting your site were incredibly lax, so they could go pretty much wherever you wanted to put them.
Questions? Okay, let's give the speaker a hand.
Thanks.